The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
The Great Irish Biodiversity Book. It's illustrated by Barry Falls. It looks at, as it sounds like, biodiversity. It is everything from newts and insects through to fauna, through to flora, I should say, marine life, marine mammals, geese, the whole shooting gallery.
Bog bodies, everything.
Bog bodies. Fruit flies drink wine when they're on the pull.
Well, the females do. The males drink the wine when they've been spurned. Or so I read on the back of a cracker.
When a male fruit fly is unlucky in love, he turns to drink.
This is what the thing I read the other day, which just goes to show you can't read, you can't believe everything you read. Whereas with my book, you can believe everything you read because this is peer reviewed. This is one of Gill's great big Irish books. They had Irish farming, they had Irish politics, they had Irish history, and now they have the great Irish biodiversity book written by me. Much the best, I have to say.
Oh, by a mile. And beautifully illustrated, it has
to be said.
Yeah,
Barry has done a great job. The poor man was on his back. If he had one leg missing or the wrong spot, he had to fix it. So it's really, I mean, he's a lovely and artistic and it looks really well. And the pictures are right scientifically as well, which is great.
Now, I'm used to you going into flora and fauna, but you go beyond that. You mentioned bogs. One of the things you talk about is the will-o'-the-wisp.
Yeah, isn't that great?
That's amazing.
Yeah, indeed.
So as I understand it, this is methane gas ignited by another gas that reacts.
Yeah. That reacts like it and sets it off. Because you see, what you have in the bog is plants that grew and fell down, but didn't actually rot away because you haven't got the bacteria. The thing is too acid, it's too wet. And they're just there layer, and that's where you get your turf from. But if you decompose things in the absence of oxygen, methane is given off, CH4. That's the stuff you have in the gas cooker. It's the same methane. But it's pretty flammable, but you need something. You know, who's going around lighting it? But you have this other gas, this phosphine, that occasionally occurs. The one that's on the matches. You know, the old matches you used to strike and they'd, the red ones, the safety ones, the unsafety ones. But anyway, that comes off the bog occasionally and it sets off this gas, which is on it, because it's a heavy gas. It's heavier than air. So, and you get this whoosh of blue and people thought this was some strange spirit that was on the bog. And if you followed it, you'd go into a big dark hole and drown. And I mean,
so people in medieval Ireland were looking at dancing flames, yes, spontaneously appearing above the bog. Yes. This is an actual thing that occurs.
Oh, yeah, it does actually occur. I mean, this is the truth. And nowadays we know what causes it. And who's out in the bog walking anyway? Anyway, with the greatest of respect, much of our bogs are gone. And you're not walking over the bog to go from A to B, particularly those raised bogs where you had good land on either side and it was a filled in lake, I mean, as opposed to the blanket bogs in the mountains, which are way up high. And you'd be going a shortcut across the bog and you'd see this. And you think, well, it is very weird. I mean, there was no electricity then. I mean, there was only the fire. And this thing didn't burn. It was just whoosh and gone.
Now, while we're talking about bogs, the other thing that you talk about, I recently experienced for the first time in my life, petrified wood.
Was it terrified of you, was it?
I have become fascinated by it. I think it's the most remarkable stuff. And we have a close variant. We don't have petrified, but we have sort of a little bit solidified.
We have bog deal. We have bog. What happened was, up to 5,000 years ago, we had different climate and the pine forests grew on the mountains. Then the climate changed, got wetter, got colder, the sphagnum began to grow all over the place and the bog crept over the trees, stopped them from getting their nourishment, the tops fell off them and the roots were all left embedded in the bog and it was mostly pine trees, so they were pine deal. They didn't decompose like the other things. They didn't decompose and they hardened up and they were full of the water and the peat and the whole lot, and that's what we have, bog deal and bog oak as well too, because oak trees this happened to, and they're found and sculptors make the most wonderful pictures, you know, statues and things out of these hard and the really hard stuff. But the people long ago loved to get the deal because it burned much longer in the fire than did the turf in actual fact, you know.
Oh, it was almost towards a coal. It
lasted long. I mean, turf can burn very quickly and they were able to find it by looking at the bog in the morning time where the frost was, because if this was a big hard lump under the thing, the frost lasted there longer. And so by looking at it, they could say, well, there's a place and they could dig it up and get it. Anyway, I'm talking about the living things in my book, not things that were there.
Well, they're in there as well. Okay, well, I'll give you a living thing then. Explain to me what the story is with the American mink. Because the American mink, I'm reading between the lines, but it's evident in the book you don't like him or her, depending on which it is. And you make clear that they are only a blow and arrived here in the 1950s from America. How did we end up with them?
They're a baddie, that's what they are. Because in the 1950s, there were fur farms to make mink coats. Mink coats for people to wear, if you wouldn't be
minded. In Ireland?
In Ireland, yes. They were brought in 1950s. And there was mink farms in Dundrum, there were mink farms in Kerry, people had them. And then along comes Brigitte Bardot. You might have heard of Brigitte Bardot. And Brigitte Bardot said it took 40 dumb animals to make a fur coat and only one dumb animal to wear it. And the sales of fur coats vanished. You wouldn't be seen dead in a fur coat. And so as a consequence, some of the people then just let the mink go. Instead of decapitating them, just opened the cages. Other places where there were floods, like in Dundrum, they were the first ones to escape on the river in Dundrum, where the pie factory used to be. Down came the flood, the Dodder, and swooshed them all away. So they were, then once they got into the wild, there was no stopping them because they are an American species. They came over here as a farm thing. There was no wolverines, no polecats, nothing to put manners on them. Out they go. I mean, we have otters that live in the river and eat fish, decent, ordinary, decent skins. But these yokes eat the fish in the river. They get out of the river and they eat the eggs of all the coot, all the water hens. If you have mink in the area, you have nothing else. And if that isn't enough for them, then they march up to the house, to the farm, and eat all the hens in the hen house to boot. So there's nothing good to be said about them. They're not protected and they can be trapped. And the fact that they bought a new island on Loch Ree, and one of the big things to keep the ground nesting birds safe is a big mink trapping thing to do with
on the island.
On the island. Well, because the mink can swim in the water, they're an awful dose entirely. And of course, the worst, even if you did kill one and brought it home to the wife for the thing, it's not even the right colour anymore, because that was a lovely mutation of that pale, pinky, greeny, whatever, pinky, furry colour. Now they're like an old cat, an old black thing you wouldn't be seeing.
Can't even make a coat out of them anymore.
No, indeed. Bad, bad, bad. But they're an invasive species, and this is the problem with taking things in that are not native, and then there's no enemies, no nothing, and they spread all over the place. But the mink is particularly bad. Don't like it.
While we're talking islands, one of the things you talk about is rabbits.
Yes.
And you talk about where they live and the prevalence of them. Am I right in saying, it is my understanding, and I'm usually wrong when I have an understanding, that up until the introduction of the African chicken, the rabbit was our main source of lean protein. We ate them hand over fist.
Where did you hear that?
I might have made it up, but I have a good feeling about it.
What's the Irish word for a rabbit?
Cunning?
Cunning. There's no Irish word for a rabbit.
What?
Cunning is actually the Danish word for a rabbit, because the rabbits were brought to Ireland by the Normans, who were of Danish origin, and they came with this thing, Kinning, K-I-N-I-N, in 1192 or 69 or whatever they came, with the rabbits as a source of food, and they brought them with the name quinine. We saw them, we said, that's a quinine, quinine it is. We spelt it with a C and a father. But the quinine word is originally came from the Danish. There's a queer one for you now. So,
but isn't that where Coney Island comes from?
Yeah.
But isn't the American Coney Island nicked from Irish Coney Islands, and the Irish Coney Island is nicked from the Gaelic, which now we discover is nicked from the Danish?
There you go. Isn't language a wonderful thing all the same? And
the
much you can learn. I mean, the hedgehogs were brought in by the Vikings, and we didn't like the look of it. We said it was an ugly old thing, grania. So the Irish word for that is graniog, an ugly looking thing. So I don't know what they called the hedgehog.
Why did the Vikings bring in hedgehogs?
Well, I asked the kids in Cork that once, and they said it was as weapons to throw at people. But in actual fact, the clue is in the name hog. There was, again, a food source.
Nobody's eating hedgehogs.
No, they can't do it anymore because they're protected.
No, I don't mean that. I mean, out of practicality purposes. Can you get nothing off it? It'd be like eating a squirrel.
Well, we won't go there. They eat squirrels in Canada.
That squirrel. It's not actually bad, but it's a complete pain in the arse to butcher. It takes forever. It's all bones.
You speak as a fellow who has been eating squirrels in his life.
I've eaten a squirrel in my time.
Well, anyway, I have my book laid out into its biodiversity book.
There's a fine point.
Yes.
Back to the book. Geese. You talk about the Greenland white-fronted goose. I remember you giving out to me at great length at one point because I believed that there was but one goose that arrived over. And you said, no, there are multiple different geese. There's Brent, there's Greenland, there's Canadian, there's all
the rest. I'm glad you listened to what I
always
say. Yeah.
Can we claim them as ours? Why do we say that they're Canadian? How do you know who owns the migrating bird?
Where are you from? It's the place you were born. So where you were born is where you're from. So these things are born in... I'm not asking for an answer from where you're from. I'm only just using this as a rhetorical question. I wouldn't dream of prying. But wherever you're from, that's where you were born. I'm from County Louth, even though I've lived in Dublin for much, much longer than
I never know.
Actually, no, but you're, there you go. But the thing is that these things are here for the winter, and they're born in Canada, they're born in Greenland, or where the Greenland white-fronted goose, and that's where they're from. Similarly, the swallows, who spend more time maybe in South Africa than here, but they're Irish swallows, because they're born here in Ireland. So it's where you're born is where you're from.
Now, the book is biodiversity. So what it does is it covers the spectrum, a vast multitude.
Yeah,
from...
It's wonderful the amount we have in it. I mean, people think biodiversity is only the rainforest. And here's 88 pages. I could have had 880 pages of it.
I never knew that we had multiple types of woodlouse.
Well, there you go. We've Protestant woodlouse and Catholic woodlouse into the bargain, if you wouldn't be minding. because there's different species, and the Protestant woodlouse are only found in Protestant graveyards, which was a great source of a logical non sequitur. And it turned out that the Protestant graveyards were the old monasteries, the old places where the lime mortar was made from ox blood and things, and it was a food source for a particular species of woodlouse which fed upon this thing. So if you wanted to find Hoffmannii, it's a Latin name, you would often look for it in Protestant graveyards. So then it's a Protestant woodlouse. Aren't you glad you asked me that question?
That is the single best thing I have ever learned in my entire life. We genuinely have Protestant and Catholic woodlice.
Well, they live in Protestant and Catholic
places. Don't modify it. Let's commit fully. The other thing that I hadn't realised is that woodlice have to remain constantly moist because effectively they're little lobsters.
Yeah, they're crustaceans. They're not insects. The insects are made of chitin. It's a hard-walled thing and they don't dry out and they fly around during the day. But the poor old woodlice, it's too dry for them during the day and they're much happier coming out at night. In fact, I have a whole section in there about your garden at night, because at night time, different environmental circumstances and there's different things come out at night.
And so that's the same for Catholic woodlice and Protestant.
Well, if you're in the graveyard. You might want to go to a graveyard in the middle of the night. But I mean, it's all there. The different places where the wildlife live, the different ones, and there's a bucket list of things you have to find. Ducks that have nests in trees, robins pincushions, kerry slugs.
We're going to have to get you back.
You have nothing else to do for the rest of your life with this book.
Couldn't recommend the book more. It is a beautiful big coffee table thing. Theoretically it's for kids, but it's for everybody. It is the Great Irish Biodiversity Book. It's illustrated by Barry Falls and it's written by the one and only Aina
and published by Gills.
Thank you very much, Aina.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.